Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
My thanks to this week's sponsor, Warfield Plants, from up in Shropshire. Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to exchange some news, views, a bit of seasonal advice and hopefully answer some of your gardening quandaries along the way. Well, my diary has been dominated by the September Chelsea Flower Show. And I can tell you, it's pretty well all-consuming. I mean, for example, last Thursday saw me up at 4 on a dark, misty morning and then up into the cab of a 16-ton lorry to take 16 trolleys of plants to the Royal Hospital grounds in Chelsea. You know, looking across the city skyline from high up gives a much better view than I will have had low down in my car. And even with our 5:30 a.m. start, it still took over 4 hours to fight our way through the traffic to that great Royal Hospital area, on site, ready to offload. This is the first ever September Chelsea. Wider pathways for social distancing, fewer larger show gardens and exhibitions in the great pavilion. First-time visitors have found plenty to interest and occupy them, but I think some of us old-timers like me, with visits dating back to 1952, remember more flower-filled times. Indeed, for me, the big show gardens down the main avenue looked to be in mourning. They were so colourless and dull. No doubt skilled camera work and some nice sunny days will make them look attractive on screen, but they're far from the kind of garden I want to see when drawing the curtains each morning. There are still plenty of horticultural skills, especially in the Great Pavilion. I mean, Raymond Everson's clematis have already been referred to, and along with Harkness roses, the way they cut back show plants last May with the postponement and then tended them carefully through the summer months to delay blooming until late September demonstrates what extraordinary skills they have. I went to see Philip Harkness last Friday and test the lovely fragrance of his new Queen Elizabeth II rose. I think I'm the only gardening journalist to be given that exclusive treat. All of the bushes have been so hard pruned back to provide budding eyes, there were few flowers to put on display at the show. Some £2.50 from the sale of each Queen Elizabeth II rose will go to the Queen Elizabeth Scholarship Trust. It's a charity founded in 1990 by the Royal Warrant Holders Association, dedicated to excellence in British craftsmanship, with support for many skills from guitar making to thatching, print, and to enamelling. A great charity, a lovely rose. Hopefully, the fragrance will give pleasure to lots of people. Next week, I hope to bring you some interviews from leading horticulturists at that show and in the Great Pavilion. But meantime, some seasonal advice. I mean, when I am home and it's still just light enough, I'm going to the row of autumn raspberries and can pick a small punnet of really lovely large raspberry fruits from two autumn fruiting kinds, Polka and Autumn Treasure. They need to be kept well watered. Boy, they do love moisture, at this time of the year especially, and of course a bit of general fertiliser diluted in that irrigation. I've had a number of questions, especially on Coleus, the variety Bonfire. It has a rich reddish to copper leaf and is slow to set flowers. And so it's a really good foliage plant, both outside through the summer, early autumn, and of course as a pot plant or a house plant. And now is a very good time to take some softwood cuttings. They should root pretty easily now. Just nip out the flower bud if you don't have any non-flowering shoots. Pot them in some good rooting compost, a white polythene bag over the pot, a nice warm sunny windowsill, and they should root quite quickly. As soon as they do start to root, take the polythene off, and you'll need to be very careful with the watering. Just keep them a bit on the dry side through the winter, and then you'll have a nice fresh stock to both take cuttings from again in the spring and to plant out in the summer. Our guest in the podcast today is Phil Tremaine. He's the general manager of the Association of Professional Landscapers. And just a little while ago, we met up in Birmingham at the Gardeners World Live special. Phil, first welcome. Where are you?
Oh, I'm actually down in, I'd love to say sunny Cornwall, but it's actually pouring down with rain at the moment, which is typical of Cornwall, as most people know.
Well, we could do with a bit of that rain. But let's just talk a bit about the demonstration garden that you built, designed by Professor David Stevens. Could you sort of describe it a bit to our listener?
It was a concept that we came up with about 5 years ago, to be honest, and we'd already had one stab at it at Ascot Flower Show. That was 4 or 5 years ago, and I had Claudia de Jong help me design that one. The whole purpose of the garden was about what lies beneath, and it was trying to show the visiting public that there's more to a garden than just the veneer that you see on the surface, that in actual fact, most of the work that goes on in a landscape garden is underneath that surface. Now, down at Ascot, we did a much smaller plot, and we used glass panels that you could view the garden through the subsurface. The problem is that none of us really thought about it that well, and the glass steamed up throughout the whole show. I spent nearly the whole show lifting glass panels and wiping them and putting them down again. So, but not to be deterred by this, I talked to the organisers at BBC Gardeners World Live and gave them the concept, and they really liked the idea and thought it was really valuable for their visitors. They've got a very strong relationship with David Stevens and said, would I mind working with David? And of course, it's an honour to work with David, so I was more than happy. And David came up with this great idea of you walk on the surface, and then to the left of you or the right of you, depending on which way you're walking, you see what lies beneath the surface that you're walking on. To get all the elements we needed, though, in this garden, it ended up being 24 metres long and 8 metres wide. It was a huge project. And on paper, it looked so doable, Peter. It looked really easy to do. I don't think any of us really appreciated until we dug the foundation for the long retaining wall that we were putting along the back of the plot at actually what we had taken on. It was huge, and it turned out really well, though. We were really pleased with the end result.
Well, as visitors walked along the pavement, what did they actually see on your garden, Phil?
What we did, we attempted to expose cross sections of what lay underneath the veneers that were on the top or the surfaces that they were walking on. So I'll give you a for instance. We had a paved area that had a sawn sandstone paving above it. That's what they could walk on. And when they looked to their right or left, they could see underneath it the 50 mil bed of mortar that the paving slab is set upon, then 150 mil of compacted type 1 MOT, which then the mortar would sit upon, and then a layer of unwoven textile underneath that, which is what we would use traditionally as a ground stabilization to stop the type 1 ingressing into the soil. So it gave them a full cross-section of what they should expect to see when their patio is being laid. We actually backed it up, though. All those specifications are actually on our webpage as well, where it's listed what they should expect in a garden project.
Well, I think it's not just on landscaping. I think when we're gardening too, the preparation is everything, isn't it? You know, they say spend twice as much on the hole as the plant, and that's pretty good advice.
Well, that old adage, failing to prepare is preparing to fail. It's the same throughout the whole of everything that you do in life. And I've also found that within horticulture, and I'm sure you know this, Peter, as well as I do, that it does take time. You cannot rush things that are linked to horticulture and gardening and landscaping. You have to do the preparation right, and you have to take your time over those things and ensure that you get it right first time. And that's what we did, at Gardener's World, and what our members do, you know, frequently.
If it comes, for example, to a retaining wall, you need some skill or experience, really, don't you? The weight of soil against something is really quite heavy. I mean, I don't think I'd know how to set out, quite honestly. I have a fella called John who came here and did some block paving for me, must be 30, if not 40 years ago, and give him a trowel. I mean, he's an absolute craftsman. How is it that we achieve this with practice and training?
Well, some of these guys have been doing it for so long, and in some instances it may have been a case of trial and error. I certainly know with retaining walls, I mean, the sort of structures that are being built in gardens these days, it's very often good advice to actually look upon another expert in the field and actually get a structural engineer's report if you're doing anything that's significant in retention of soil. And we do advise our members that anything over 600 mil is usually beneficial to get a structural engineer's report, depending on what you're retaining, of course.
And paving, one or two tips if you were facing paving an area, what should one do?
Well, I mean, obviously the thing with paving is the first thing you've got to think about is where water's going to go when you've paved that surface. You've got to consider where your falls are going to be and where you're going to direct the water that lands onto your paving, whether that's going to go into a drain or whether that's going to go into a flower bed or onto a lawn. You certainly want it going away from your house wherever possible, because you don't want water going towards the house. And then there's also elements where you have to consider what soil you've got. Now, if you've got some really light sandy soil, then you may have to do a significant dig out to get to something that's firm enough to start putting your subbase in, for instance. If you've got a clay soil, then you've got considerations of when you've done your dig out, there could be some ground heave after you've done the paving, and then the whole thing can start to move when the ground warms up or gets too wet. So there are lots of considerations in the groundworks ahead of the actual paving itself. And that's what we were trying to indicate with what lies beneath. There are these big considerations to make before you actually do your paving. And that's why, if you're a DIYer, you certainly need to get some advice. And there are plenty of places where you can get good advice. But to actually employ an expert who knows, who understands ground conditions and can do these things for you, is probably a good option.
Well, generally speaking, in life, you get what you pay for, don't you? I don't know whether I'm fortunate, but if I go to buy something in an area where I don't have much experience, I don't want the cheapest, I want the best. And then I want value for money. When it comes to landscaping, if you went to one of your associated professional landscapers, presumably they would set you a price? And are you able to keep the price? Because the weather goes against you sometimes, doesn't it, on jobs?
When you look at all these, the sort of like advice to the consumer about getting price for work, I mean, they usually say get three quotes, don't they? And that seems to be a general thing. And if you get three quotes from a landscaper, the tendency is with people, and I hate to generalise, but it does seem to be a thing that people will always go to the cheapest price without actually looking at the detail of what each individual company is offering. Now, if you've got two companies that are, let's for instance, say 15,000, and you've got one that's coming in at 6,000, then alarm bells should be ringing, really, that there's something missing. That they aren't doing quite the same as the other two that are a bit more close on price. Look at the detail. The devil is in the detail, and ask your landscapers to explain their quotations for you, because if you have a conversation with them, they will be able to explain how that price is built up, and then you can make your judgment from that. And as you say, Peter, then it's about value for money. You know, one of them might be just very expensive because they've got lots of overheads, and that might be the case, but you need to look at the detail of what they're actually supplying for you.
You've mentioned Professor David Stevens as the designer of your Birmingham garden. What part do garden designers play? Because I come across quite a lot of garden designers who've done no more than a term's training, and it worries me a bit that their training and experience is not deep enough.
The thing is that garden designers nowadays, it is very easy to get a garden design qualification and to set yourself up as a garden designer. What the young designers that are doing, and I put young in inverted commas because they're not always young in age, they're just young in experience. And what they're tending to do now, what we're advising is that they work with the landscape contractor and don't try and do things that they're not quite experienced enough to do yet. So if they work with their landscaper and allow the landscaper to actually advise on the construction methods of things, I think that's a very positive thing. Because one thing that garden designers do, and I'm sure a lot of the design and build companies welcome, is that they do have fresh ideas. They have new ideas of garden design. They quite often are slightly more creative, you know, in their thoughts and the use of products and things like that. So they do have a place within the scheme of the garden design and build.
Well then, Phil, you know, we've spoken about the construction and the design. What about plants? Because I come across some garden designers whose knowledge of plants is a little bit thin. I mean, do you have a good experience in the use of plants?
Well, I trained as a grower many years ago. I did my training at Burncoos Nurseries down in Cornwall. I'm sure you know Burncoos, Peter. Had a huge range of plant material, and so I had a really good plant knowledge. I'll be honest, it's not as good now because I don't work with them so much anymore, and it's amazing how much you forget. Every designer seems to have about 20 to 30 plants that they use regularly, and they're the ones that they know, and they rely on those plants. But of course, plant supply is difficult now. So it's whether or not the plants that people want are actually out there, are actually still being grown by the growers. So there's a lot that goes into the planting of gardens now.
Well, if you worked at Burncoats, it's a fantastic nursery, some great plants people there, without question. But in more recent years, we're moving towards bigger things, aren't we? You had a demonstration of planting a semi-mature tree at Birmingham. When you get to bigger things, they need special attention too, don't they?
They do. I mean, there's lots of considerations to have about the larger plant specimens that you have. And at Birmingham, on the bigger trees, we obviously had an anchoring system. That's because you've got, you know, potentially 4 to 6 metres above the ground, and you've got to anchor that root ball into the ground, or else it's just going to blow over at some stage. And people don't want to see unsightly stakes and ties anymore. And it's actually, the anchoring system is better for the tree in many respects. But on the larger plants, where the mistakes can quite often happen there is that people don't prepare the hole well enough for those plants. Don't dig the hole big enough, don't put enough nutrient around in the base of the hole and things. And then certainly you have to think about having an irrigation system, because when they go into the ground and they come out of the pot and away from that, you know, that nursery environment, they are gonna start to suffer. So having a good irrigation system is key. From a landscaper's point of view, the big thing is the handling of those plants when they're delivered. I mean, there is so much damage done to plants with people not handling them properly when they get on site. And there's a lot of training out there for landscapers that on plant handling. It seems a weird thing, but it is so important to handle those plants correctly when they come on site.
Well, where would you get that kind of training? I mean, if I was a young man with my wheelbarrow, like old DJ Squire in the 30s setting off to do a bit of landscaping, does the Association of Professional Landscapers provide training?
We work with training academies, really. So there's a training academy now in the Northwest called the Landscape Academy, who delivers that sort of thing. There is one in the West Midlands called TASC, who also deliver that sort of thing to people who wish to take on that sort of training. The APL actually has its own apprenticeship course as well, which is up in Preston. And we get Jamie Butterworth to come up and give sessions to our apprentices on plant handling and planting combinations and things like that. So, you know, there is a great emphasis on the care and the handling and the use of plants now within the industry. It's great that the industry has woken up to the usefulness of plants in garden design and garden landscaping. It's a bit of a shame, Peter, that some of the public now are intent on having as few plants as they can in their gardens, it would seem. There's so many now that don't want plants because they look for this low or no maintenance. Yeah.
Well, I think we have to fight against that, and certainly I've worked with you and your colleagues trying to persuade people to leave the front gardens with some soil and with greenery and with flowers. And I look forward to seeing more of those beautiful demonstration gardens of the kind that you built at Birmingham just a few weeks ago. Phil, thanks very much for your words of advice today.
Yeah, that was it's a pleasure, Peter. It's always a pleasure to speak to you, and I wish you all the best for the rest of this year.
And my tailpiece? Well, this week, a quote from "My Houseplant Changed My Life." Green Wellbeing for the Great Indoors, a book published by Dawley and Kindersley, DK, at 994, and written by David Dominey of ITV's Love Your Garden. Goodness, what a man, so full of enthusiasm for all aspects of gardening, and a great Pied Piper of young people, showing them just how they can get pleasure and satisfaction from growing things. And the quote from his book, My Houseplant Changed My Life, of Vresia splendens, the flaming sword plant. He says of this plant, "I dazzle by day and help you breathe at night. A member of the bromeliad genera, that's pineapples, that breathe and produce oxygen at night, unlike most houseplants that only produce O2 in the day. Combine the flaming sword, Vresia splendens, with other plants and you will have 24-hour oxygen production." So there we are. If you've got a flaming sword handy, sleep well tonight. And I look forward to joining you again next week. My thanks to this week's sponsor, Warfield Plants, from up in Shropshire, and to my producer, Rich Jarman, and of course to you for listening. Oh.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.